think that that also just helps bring more awareness to cultural fire, prescribed burns, natural forests?
Yeah, it definitely does. It's a very critical practice that's happened here for millennia. And I think it's really important that the public is more aware of the benefits of fire, not just cultural fire, but also natural lightning fire as well, because we live in these fire adapted ecosystems. So the big thing that's missing from many of the places we live is fire. We just have been excluding it for a long time. But that's changing. And I think the story of fire is one that's very, like, it's deeply human. So I think in many ways we can all connect to our feelings around fire. Like, we usually feel really good when we're sitting around a campfire. We usually feel really bad when we see the devastating impacts of wildfire that we become more used to. So yeah, my work, and this is why it's part of the change makers. They came together to kind of think how they could support the globe, how they could be change makers. And so this annual award recognizes people who are pushing kind of the envelope in their fields. It's a very cool opportunity to be a fire ecologist in a rural community in Canada and be recognized among people that I very much so admire.
How does this award actually translate to affecting your work? Do you feel like this opens doors or kind of brings any more attention to your work and even maybe even the area of Northern BC to the world?
Yeah, I think it does. I think that people are really looking for ways to connect with nature and ways to connect more with ecosystems. And this is just one of those stories that allows people to see the benefits to, again, like a disaster, essentially, that we become really used to. So I think it does alert people to the fact that there's really good positive things going on, and that there's many people who are thinking about climate change. There's many people who are thinking about the well-being of ecosystems and human health. It's a great reminder of the good work that's going on. My focus is still the same. It's about really producing the science so that we can understand more about how plants interact with fire. And so I am trying to understand more about some of the genetic side of plant communities that have always evolved with fires, like how our landscapes evolved with fire and some of the issues that we're seeing right now because they're not able to absorb fire any longer. So I'm thinking about that in a social sense, but also a biophysical sense. I'm just about to go into burn season, and that usually lasts about 6 weeks or so. I'm always up for, you know, sharing work, and hopefully do that again soon.
Here. Is there an actual physical award that you have?
It is not a physical award, but yeah.
Was there anything else that you wanted to just let people know either about what you're working on?
Just that, you know, we are continuing to support cultural fire in this area. We have a few burns planned with some of the nation partners, and it's an opportunity for the public to just become more aware of some of these practices. And so if you hear about them, you know, you might have people that say that's a lot of work for a fire, or we don't want to see smoke in the community. I think it's just really important to educate yourself on, learn about this incredible cultural practice.
Thanks so much for taking the time to speak with me about this today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
CSK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.
You are tuned in to Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. Thank you to Pam Hassan from CSEK in Smithers for that piece. Coming up next, we have a bit of a longer one coming out of Due North, which is CIFA Radio in, I believe, Prince George, B.C. This is from their LJI journalist, Ian Gregg, and the title of this piece is Local Organization Connects People Across Northern BC to Para-Athletic Opportunities. Take a listen.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North. on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca. This 2026 in Milano Cortina, Italy, the Olympics transitioned into the Paralympics, where Northern BC was actually represented by one athlete, Adam Kingsmill of Smithers, British Columbia, who currently resides in Calgary, Alberta. While the goaltender ultimately took home silver in the para ice hockey finals, one has to wonder what's involved in the journey between simply wanting to play adapted hockey to going all the way to the Paralympics on the international stage. To give us a behind-the-curtains perspective, over the line today, we're connecting with our guest, Rob Stiles, the Director of Programming and President of Northern Adapted Sports Association, or NASA, a wing of Engage Sport North, an organization that helps athletes achieve excellence in their sport, in their field. And if you've seen a Northern BC Olympian competing, chances are they've had something to do with Engage Sport North. That's how this type of thing happens. Now, Rob, thanks so much for joining us today. Thanks for calling in. You're in Fort St. John.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. You're in Fort St. John today conducting some programming for NASA. Before I get into it, where do you typically reside? Where do you call home?
I'm based out of Prince George. If anyone's in Prince George, they've probably seen us doing certainly the wheelchair sports at the university. That's where a lot of our stuff is based out of. But much like, you know, Engage Sport and NASA, 100-mile house up. So a huge geographic area.
Absolutely massive as Northern BC is. You do a lot of traveling with your work. Now, Adam Kingsmill, who's our Paralympian from Smithers, who's competing in Italy right now. They're actually, Team Canada is playing China at this moment. We'll see how that game goes, and best of luck to him. You didn't actually personally work with Adam, but it's a nice segue and an opportunity to talk about how excellence in athleticism develops in Northern BC. And I'm curious, what does NASA do to help athletes achieve the next level? I mean, obviously, people need an interest in sport to get into it. But when they find out, oh, they're actually quite good and could get to competition level, where do you step in? What happens?
Well, we actually step in right before that. So one of the big problems when it comes to para sports is just all of the additional barriers that you have to getting into that and even knowing about it. So what we find is certainly, I mean, Adam's an example of someone who was injured very early, but you also have those congenital disabilities where there's so much else happening when people are very young that maybe the sports and the physical activity is not what anyone is thinking of. You know, there's a lot happening, there's a lot to deal with. The school system as it is tries their best, but they don't necessarily have that capability to even introduce like PE classes for someone with a disability across the board, whether that's physical or even intellectual, is very, very, very hard. And then if you're older and you get injured, you maybe get some sort of introduction when you're at rehab in, say, Vancouver at GF Strong. But when you come back to community, you really don't have any of that. So we're right there, right from the get-go, the awareness piece. We run programming across the north. I travel all over. We work in schools. We bring out adapted equipment so that absolutely everyone can join in. We can have a go at it. And then once people have got that, then we worked with that individual, with that family, to facilitate all the way through. So I just got back from the BC Winter Games, where wheelchair basketball takes place as an adapted sport. We had a range of able-bodied and physically disabled individuals playing there, which is sort of the junior level up. And then we'll support you right the way through with that, you know, equipment and high-level coaching and strength and conditioning and all of the fun stuff that really comes in once you start getting to really high-level athletics.
So your organization is purely volunteer-driven. It's a nonprofit organization. And that's Northern Adaptive Sports. But you are connected with Engage Sport North, sharing equipment and getting funding, things like that. It's a labor of love that you all participate in this with. You're in Fort St. John right now, conducting some programming with some of the schools there. What is the goal of this? Is it simply involvement, just to get youth and people involved in sport in general?
Yeah, so I'm up here. We actually have a mix of stuff going. So I have wheelchair sports days regularly in a variety of communities. So Fort St. John, it's every month. So that was last Wednesday. But I'm in Dawson Creek tomorrow for Have a Go Wheelchair Basketball, and Sunday for Para Ice Hockey. So I tend to come into a community and work a whole load of things in the evenings and the weekends, and then with the schools as well. I'm off west next week, so I'm in Smithers and Terrace and Rupert next week doing the same kinds of things. I think we have Wheelchair Rugby doing a tour through next week. So
keeping busy. When we're looking at kind of the state of sport in northern BC, how well represented are we with athletes participating at a high level in Winter Paralympics? Do we have many people represented?
Well, the Winter Paralympics is quite small anyway, so we're not really well represented there, which is one of those things. People are like, oh, it's nuts, we're in the north, you know, we have a cold climate, clearly we should be. But in many ways, it's actually very understandable. So if you do think of an individual with a physical disability, congenital or acquired, they already have all of these wonderful barriers for life. As someone, my wife actually uses a wheelchair, so I can say that winter is not her favorite time of the year. So you already have that, you know, the snow is a pain for those of us that have to walk through it and shovel it. It's the next level up if you've got to try and push a wheelchair through it, for example, or use a walker through it. So you already have that kind of additional barrier, so you have to get past that to then get on there. So the fact, weirdly, we have two goalies. So we do have Adam Kingsmill playing. Maggie Manning, who is actually the goalie for the women's team, was not a Northerner, but she was at UMBC, and we actually introduced para ice hockey to her. So strangely, we're quite well represented in the goalie department, and we have individuals out there. So we have people that are trying. We have Paranordic equipment. We have the Paranordics that come to Caledonia Nordic Ski Club as well. So there is that start, but it is very, very tricky, and there is a lot to work through on that. We are slightly better represented in the summer Paralympics. We have a few athletes up here in the north that do that. But again, there's such a lot of additional barriers to that. And once it gets to training at a high level, if you happen to be in a team sport, there's all that additional need for people to play with. So there is always that struggle. As a whole, like I can speak from my day job hat with Engage, the Northern BC is actually extremely well represented in Olympics and high-level sport and Paralympics. We punch well above our weight. So we should be proud of that.
I'm going to presume that one of the reasons we do have two Paralympic goalies is because we have hockey rinks in a lot of our communities. That's a facility that Northern BC actually has in a number of communities. But we spoke to some of the barriers that are there, but what is actually enabling some of the successes of seeing our Northern athletes get to these high levels?
Well, it comes down to two things, and it's sort of the same as in the able-bodied world. There's a support structure, and be that, you know, families is often the big thing. But, you know, I don't want to blow my own horn, but there are some of us that are out there volunteering as well and going out of our way to supply that support. If you are going to make that top level, probably in anything, but I'm in the sport world, so certainly in sport, having that support around you and to help you and that knowledge base is super helpful. We do also have history of people willing to pass that on. So those that have already been down that route, there may only be a few of them, but they're quite able to come back. They understand, and they have a peer element of understanding what it's like in the north and those additional levels that maybe someone in Vancouver doesn't necessarily understand, not having to go through that in quite the same way. Mm-hmm. And we do now, you know, we've been very fortunate. NASA is in, it's coming up to its 10th year now since we started taking it on. There were groups before us. But we have been very, very well supported by grants mainly, but by companies, by individuals. And we've built a quite good inventory of equipment, because one of the biggest issues you do have is just the cost of equipment. And for those who take their kids to hockey or play hockey themselves, we know how expensive that is. We have for hockey, for example, you have all of that and you need additional equipment in terms of the sled. And, you know, a basketball, for example, is all you need to play basketball. But you do need a whole wheelchair if you're going to play wheelchair basketball, and that's $5,000-$7,000 on top. So it's that, you know, addition. And that's just to try the sport, right? So we have managed to ground that support structure across the board up here in the north, and long may it continue. And that will continue to be a source for further excellence going forward.
The Olympics themselves are such a big deal on the world stage. And the Paralympics also are, you know, the highest event within Paralympic sport that we get to witness. It's televised nationally, globally. It's one of those events that's actually hard to ignore, even if you don't care about it at all. It still manages to be in your face for a time. And it's unbelievable that there is, you know, anyone at all in Northern BC represented in these sports competing at such a high level. And I think it's revelatory to many to realize and understand just the amount of volunteer capacity and commitment that's required to make that happen. It doesn't all cascade down from one large corporate sponsorship, and now we're there. It requires years and years of input from not just the athlete, but a lot of committed people around them. My question to you in that regard, what work does your organization have to do to recruit volunteers and get people involved in what you're doing and your passion?
It's a very strange situation, because when we do get people involved, they're usually in it for the long term, and they usually realize that more than just making a difference, because I think there is that view that, you know, people want to make a difference in individuals or groups' lives. It's actually great fun. So a lot of the time, we actually need people to play. So a big thing that we have is that, you know, we have a lot of equipment. It does require getting out. There's often, you know, certain individuals will require a little bit more time to get ready. And if we have one volunteer there and that's all we have, and they're spending all of their time getting person A into whatever that may be, a sit ski or a sled or whatever, then everything else has to wait. So there is that sort of part of it. But we often just need people. And that's where it becomes actually the most tricky. We almost have, especially in the team sports view, that people don't want to get involved because they think they're taking away opportunity, when actually they're actively providing opportunity. Like, we have a wheelchair basketball team in Prince George that's going to finals in a couple of weeks and off to nationals after that. They do have able-bodied athletes that join in with that. And if it wasn't for those able-bodied athletes, the 2, 3, 4 people that do have a physical disability are never going to be able to do that team sport unless they, you know, want to move, which is the other option. It's, that's what happened with, like, an Adam Kingsmill. There's not enough people playing para ice hockey in the north to guarantee that those people. So he has to relocate, in his case, to Calgary, to a completely different community. So our biggest problem is actually getting people to come out and join in. Once they do, they usually think, hey, it's kind of fun. And it's a really great group, you know, fully inviting. We're all ages. We're fully inclusive. It's part of the awareness part of things. That's where we actually really struggle. That, I mean, we do get volunteers that want to help because they're doing a degree in a, you know, a medical field, and they want to be out. But it's like, no, we need people to come and play and join in with everything, to just help grab stuff. And that's where we really struggle, is those getting those extra numbers out.
Can our audience take that as an invitation to come and join one of your leagues or the next event that you've got happening? Excellent. What is the next event happening in Prince George area that people could potentially get involved in?
Okay, so Prince George, we are always free for the first three anyway. So if anyone wants to try absolutely anything, it's always free. We actually have a deal with UNBC as well. So if you're students or faculty, it's free. No matter what you do, you can come out to everything all the time. We have para ice hockey on Sundays at Kin 1, and we have wheelchair basketball on Mondays. We have two sessions at the university at the Sports Center, 4:30 till 6 and 8 till 10. And we also have wheelchair rugby on Wednesdays, 7 to 8:30. They're open to everyone, and people are more than welcome. If you want to try something a little bit different, we do a lot of individual sports, and we do summer sports as well. We have adapted kayaks and hand cycles, and we have paranordic skis. We do para badminton. We do wheelchair tennis. We have wheelchair track. So we've got a bit of everything in there. People are always welcome to give me a shout, give me a call, or contact me, programs@northernadaptedsports.ca. We're always happy to have people, any age, any gender, any ethnicity, any person.
Wonderful. And you also have an AGM coming up. Are people able to get involved in that as well?
Yeah, I haven't fixed the date yet, so you can't plug it that well. But you people are more than welcome to reach out. We're always looking for interested folks. So the more the merrier is what I always say.
Keep your ear to the ground, folks. All right.
Absolutely.
So we're speaking to Rob Stiles, Programming Director and President of NASA, or Northern Adapted Sports Association. Have a great rest of your day, and thanks so much for your time, Rob. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You as well. This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca.
The return label, order seven more, always helps, makes me feel better deep inside my shell. I'm at ease, I can forget that out there in the world I'm a fish and there's grizzlies. Didn't get it right, send it back. Where's the return label, order seven more, always helps, makes me feel better deep inside my shell.
Bird Note. One of the biggest threats to birds is the decline in biodiversity due to habitat loss. And the traditional manicured lawn isn't helping. Even birds who visit backyard feeders, like these black-capped chickadees, need a healthy mix of seeds, berries, and insects, often found on the native plants that we villainize as weeds when they grow in our lawns, says ecologist Douglas Tallamy.
We have more than 40 million acres of lawn in the U.S., which is the size of New England, and that's an ecological deadscape.
That means one of the easiest ways to protect birds at home is to grow native plants, says Tallamy, who co-founded an organization called Homegrown National Park to help people transform their lawns into havens for wildlife.
I'd love people to stop looking at their yard as an isolated ecosystem. It's part of a neighborhood. And somebody's got a sunny spot down the street, but no trees. Okay, that's where the pollinator gardens go. Somebody's got a giant oak and is overspreading two or three yards. That's great. That's going to provide a lot of resources for many of the houses in that yard. So look at your neighborhood as an entire local ecosystem and see what the total resources are.
Reducing your lawn to make room for native plants is a small step forward.
But imagine if everybody did this. This is why we call the Homegrown National Park movement a grassroots movement. It's a call to action.
To learn more about Homegrown National Park, start at our website, birdnote.org. I'm Ariana Remmel.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Across the U.S., AI data centers, electric vehicles, and energy-intensive industries are driving a surge in the demand for electricity. But at the same time, some older power plants are retiring, and in many areas, the grid is struggling to keep up with growing energy needs.
The grid is in trouble. I don't think the general public knows how serious the situations that we're seeing.
Oliver Stover of the consulting firm Charles River Associates co-authored a report that shows that offshore wind can help. A single offshore wind turbine can power thousands of homes. And Stover says offshore wind can complement other power sources. In many areas, it reliably generates power at night, when solar panels do not. And in winter, when bad weather can disrupt natural gas plants.
Wind generation is materially stronger at night and much, much stronger in the winter. So this creates this really fantastic synergy with the resources that we already have on the grid now.
Despite federal pushback, developers have been building offshore wind farms near New England, New York, and Virginia, coastal areas with growing energy demands. So abundant ocean winds could soon help feed a hungry power grid with clean energy. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
And with that, we have reached the end of this episode of Speak Up. I want to thank you all so very much for tuning in this hour. And make sure you stay tuned. Tuesdays are a pretty amazing day here at the station for live, fresh, new, exciting, cutting-edge programming from so many different sources, so many different people, so many different perspectives. In about 2 minutes, we have Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. Make sure you stay tuned for that if you want a good dose of just sort of global events as well as what's going on within America as well. Up next after Democracy Now! Is Raccoon City, which is then going to go into typically Tuesdays. Have a couple open mics after that, so you never know what you're going to get fully. Later in the night, though, we have a slew of amazing live programming from Slumber Party to Bitcoover, which is our music coordinator Connor's show, where he plays chiptune and video game music and so many other electronic subgenres. It's a really good time. And with that, that is all I have to say. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Make sure you stay tuned also on Thursday for the 10 a.m. Speak Up with Jesse. And tomorrow, Wednesday, 10 a.m., will be Intravenous. Might be a special episode, so I would stay tuned for that one. Anyways, it's been a pleasure, as always. This is Danny Nesvedarani, your host for the hour, as well as the community journalist here at CJSF. Democracy Now! Coming up at the end of the hour. Stay tuned.
Who doesn't love music? Join the weekly discussion at the CJSF Record Club with other music aficionados, checking out new releases and forgotten classics, exploring and learning about genres and loving music. Every Thursday at CJSF Burnaby from 4 p.m. till 5 p.m. Listen, learn, and share.